Hi, it's Simon Smart here. I wonder if you've ever had the experience of profoundly loving someone and yet really disagreeing with them on certain issues. I know I've had experiences like that in my life. The question of whether we have the right to choose when and how we die tends to be one of these questions that divides people. It's a question that bioethicist Margaret Somerville has spent a lot of time thinking about. She's really sympathetic to those who see euthanasia as a way of easing suffering, but she also strongly disagrees with them. Today, a conversation about the ethics of euthanasia. But it's also about more than that. It's about the society we want to leave for future generations.
Can you tell me, do you think that euthanasia should be legal?
I think people should have the right to have control of their lives no matter what, and that includes death.
If you're at that point in your life where you know it's going to be ending, I think you should be allowed to have the dignity to decide yourself.
I think that if there's no chance of being cured, maybe because they don't go through the pain.
God didn't create us for no reason, and humans cannot determine their destiny unless God approves it.
With pets and your animals, you can choose to put them down so they're not in pain, so I think humans should have the same option.
Everyone's got the right to do to a certain extent of what they want. I think there's got to be a line, you know, the same as everything, but I do think that in certain circumstances that it should be agreed with, yeah.
God gave us a life and he takes it away and no one else should have that authority.
Do you think that there are potentially any negative consequences?
Oh, I think it needs to be done in consideration with someone's mental health and that they've considered other options, but then if that's their decision and there's no better option for them, then they should be able to do it when they're ready with their own dignity.
Hi, it's Simon Smart with you. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Well, being able to choose when and how we die, especially as we enter old age, is something that modern Western people are increasingly drawn to. Now, it doesn't get necessarily as much attention at the moment as other big ethical issues of our time, but euthanasia is one of the most contested areas of bioethics today, and perhaps one of the most important as we think about what kind of society would we want to live in and leave for future generations. Bioethicist Margaret Somerville, who works at McGill University in Canada, though she's originally from Adelaide, is sympathetic to those who see euthanasia as a way of easing suffering, but she also strongly disagrees with them. And today on Life and Faith, we bring you some of our recent conversation with Professor Somerville. We should warn you that some of the content in today's program may be distressing to some listeners. Margaret Somerville, welcome to CPX.
Thank you.
Now, we've all known people who've suffered at the end of life. It's not hard to see why people are attracted to the idea of euthanasia, is it?
No, and that's the suffering individual who's competent and believes that there's nothing ethically or morally wrong with euthanasia is the strongest case for legalising it. And it's not easy, particularly if they don't see why they can't have control. It's often put in terms of right to autonomy, right to self-determination, right to control. Suffering is equated to a loss of dignity, and you can't do anything. Well, they think you can't do anything to give them back a feeling of dignity, and so the way that the pro-euthanasia case is argued is that their dignity is restored by putting them out of their suffering with a lethal injection. And I just want to make very clear what euthanasia is. Euthanasia is when a doctor has a lethal injection, gives it to the patient, intending to kill the patient. What we found in Canada, there was a big survey done of 2,000 people, 1,000 of them in Quebec and 1,000 of them in the rest of Canada. 40% of the people did not understand that euthanasia meant a lethal injection. And in Canada, euthanasia has been brought in as legal by never using the word euthanasia, never using the term assisted suicide. And what it's called in Quebec is medically assisted death, and in the rest of Canada they call it physician assisted death. And what they found was, of the Quebec group, 60% of the Quebecers who voted for this didn't understand that medically assisted death was a lethal injection. They were shocked.
Well, this is where you say the language we use on this topic is critical in understanding it.
Absolutely critical. So first of all, I call it euphemizing euthanasia. We put nice, soft, cuddly words on it. We put a white coat on it. We are used to thinking doctors don't do bad and unethical things, so it must trust. We think that doctors heal and cure you. There's a big project of promoting euthanasia as just ordinary medical treatment, just a little step along the way from what we already accept, such as rights to refuse treatment, turning off respirators when that is an unwarranted invasion, giving fully adequate pain management, even if it could shorten life, but if it's done properly, that is extremely rare. It's not a tiny little step from that. A physician intervening with an intention to kill is a radical change in the law. It's a radical change in medicine, having physicians doing that. And it's a radical change in the most fundamental of society's values, namely respect for life.
This question around freedom to choose seems to be an ultimate good now in our society. Yeah. Do you think that's what's lying beneath most of this discussion?
Yes, but I think it's an expression of something else. I think what it is that we naturally and understandably all have a fear of death, and that we used to deal with that fear in a given place at a certain time once a week. And what that was, we went to synagogue, mosque, prayer house, church, whatever it was. And I think that our societies have become post-secular, not even secular, and people haven't got that place to engage in what I call death talk. That is, we have to discuss death around some situation and with other people to be able to live reasonably comfortably with the knowledge that we will die.
Yeah, so what's lost then when we've moved away from that weekly engagement with a kind of community and a story that's bigger than ourselves?
Well, we've got no way to control that fear. And I think death has leaked out into it's like it's everywhere. If you look at, even if you look at the movies and violence on television, things like that, in a way, that's a way of trying to control death. What the social psychologists call it, a terror management device. And they don't mean terror in the sense of terrorists that we talk about now. What they meant it as was that we've got this intense fear. It creates a free-floating anxiety. Control of fear makes us feel better. So euthanasia can be seen as a control mechanism for the fear of death, because we've lost our other control mechanisms of it. There's a whole lot of people who, you know, they've got no belief in anything after this. They see the highest exercise of being human as choosing for yourself, as enhancing their definition of human dignity, and of being able to choose. And you're right, they see choice as a good in itself rather than whether what you choose is good or bad.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity, and we're bringing you an interview today with Professor Margaret Somerville on why she has long opposed euthanasia. You seem to think this is a very special issue for our society. Isn't this just one of many issues and we can just let this one go because it's just letting old people who are suffering die?
Simon, one reason it's a special issue is because it's universal. It applies to everyone. And it's pretty hard to think of another issue that affects everyone. It's a human rights issue because we open up the possibility of abuse. And if we look at what we call the slippery slopes in the Netherlands and Belgium, we can see that once it's legalised, you cannot control either its expansion to other other categories of people. For example, in the Netherlands, you can now have euthanasia for a disabled newborn baby if the parents want that during the first 12 months. We've just had a new report from Belgium that one in 60 people who are euthanized don't know that they're being euthanized. So there's two kinds of slippery slopes. There's the logical slippery slope that once you say it's okay for a person who's competent, gives informed consent, is an adult, knows exactly what they're doing, and has terrible suffering that you can't relieve in any other way, and you go ahead with that, then you say, well, wait a minute, our reason for allowing this is the right of self-determination and autonomy. So why do you have to be suffering? Wouldn't it be enough if the person says, well, I'm tired of life, I'd like this? Or wouldn't it be enough if they can't exercise their autonomy because they're not competent, but they're suffering? Isn't it discrimination not to relieve their suffering with euthanasia, where we'd do it if they were a mentally competent person? So instead of requiring both justifications, you only require one or the other. Then it goes on, well, what about kids? They suffer too. Maybe they need to be able to have euthanasia. And just last week, the Dutch Pediatric Medical Society has recommended that all children have access to euthanasia.
So it's a slippery slope that has some realities that we're seeing play out already. And so it's not just sort of your
It's not my imagination.
No.
I'd just like to go back to what we were talking about before, because you raised there the issue of imagination. Where will this lead if we legalise it now? I mean, I think the chances are if we legalise it now, maybe not a lot of people will be given euthanasia. But the sort of imagination we also have to use is, how do you think your great-great-grandchildren will die if you legalise this now? And I can almost guarantee to you that euthanasia will have been normalised. The other important thing about euthanasia, we talked earlier on and you picked up the point that language was important, and we talk about it in nice, soft, gentle, merciful terms. What we now know, and this is extraordinary new research, is that we've got experimental psychologists who are looking at how do we make ethical decisions. I've long argued that humans have got what I call multiple ways of knowing. And two of the important ones in ethics are imagination, especially moral imagination, and what I call examined emotions. When you have a response to something like, you're going to euthanize someone and take their organs for transplant, which is happening in Belgium, and you say, yuck, that's your emotions telling you there's something wrong. And there's an old saying in ethics that you ignore your feelings at your ethical peril. What that language does, it suppresses your moral intuitions and it suppresses your appropriate emotional reaction. And so you make wrong ethical decisions, or you don't see that you're dealing with a very serious ethical issue.
Well, at least you might be able to convey to people that it's ethically complex. I mean, sometimes we're led to believe it's just a very simple equation here, isn't it? One of the things I'm interested in is talking about the way you might emphasise the communal aspect of this against the individual response. I mean, even if you think about something as simple as what effect this has on the doctors who are responsible or asked to do this sort of thing, but what sort of society do we want to become seems to be an important question for you in this.
Is, yeah. I mean, I often use a statement that I wrote many, many years ago, that you can't judge a society by how it treats its strongest, most powerful, most privileged members. You can judge it by how it treats its weakest, most in need, most vulnerable people. And people who are old and fragile and dying, they belong in the latter group. So then if all we're going to do for them is give them a lethal injection, I think we're a pretty sad and sick society. One of the problems in this area is that the people who want to do that are doing it for what they perceive to be the most compassionate reasons and empathetic reasons.
They do, don't they? I mean, people aren't doing this out of hateful reasons.
No.
They're doing it for mercy, which means it's a very complicated discussion to have.
And it's also hard to argue against.
Yeah. Now, you've also written that we need to be able to talk about euthanasia and embed it in a moral context without resorting to the religious talk. Yeah, why is that? And is it even possible to do it?
I think it is. I had a really interesting experience just a few weeks ago. I was being interviewed on one of the major TV stations by a woman who's, you know, very highly respected interviewer called Mutsumi Kashishi. And before we went on camera, she said, "I'm an atheist." She said, "But I'm very interested in what you mean by there's a mystery in life and there's a mystery in death." And I said, "Well, Mutsumi, you wouldn't think that, you know." She said, "Well, of course I think that." And I thought, how interesting. And we've been having a correspondence since then about what would that be for somebody who's not religious. And I think that probably a lot of people sense that there's more to us than we can fully understand.
Well, that was Professor Margaret Somerville from McGill University in Canada on some of the ethical complexities involved in a consideration of euthanasia. Next week, the art of good arguments and the consequences of bad ones.
The moment that you carry on as if human beings have value and dignity, if you believe that truth matters, well, now you've stepped out of atheism and you're operating on the edges of a Christian worldview.